Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, March 18th, 2015. And today we have a special guest, Greg Hunter, will be joining us in here in a few minutes. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, it's a good day today. Interesting things. It's good to have Greg on, and things are popping. And I was certainly glad to see gold have a nice little pop today. We had a high of 1175, and right now up $20 on the New York spot price. The New York spot price up 20 at 1169. Silver's up 42 cents, almost 3% at 1605. Good to see that back over 16. Platinum was up $19 at 1115, along with palladium up 16 at 779. It was interesting because I was listening to the news as everybody was waiting breathlessly for the Janet Yellen announcement today at the Federal Reserve meeting they've held for 2 days. Markets took off a half hour prior to her initial interview or her televised announcement. And so all the information was released a half hour. Everybody knew all the markets. The Dow was down. It was in the red today. You had gold barely, you know, hovering around the, 1150 level. We even had a low of 1144 on the day, same way with silver. And we had oil that wasn't doing anything. Then all of a sudden, around 2 o'clock, all the markets turned around. The Dow was up and everything. All the markets turned up except the dollar. And so it was good to see the gold pop. Pardon?
I was just looking at the U.S. dollar index.
Yeah, that dropped almost 2 points, 1.81. 1.81 at 97.79. So that was the end. You had the crude oil up 1.32. I think it was even higher earlier, 44.78. I think it came off the low of the day. And the paper markets today, as I mentioned, turned around significantly. You had the Dow up 1.25%, up 226 points at 18,075. You had the NASDAQ up 45 at 49.82. The S&P was up 1.21%, also 1.25%, at 2,090. 9. The other thing that got battered with the along with the U.S. dollar was the 10-year yield, the bonds. That dropped 0.11 at 1.95. But the euro, I mean, we had, Monday, 104? 104 in overnight trading on the euro. We're looking at 108 right now, up 2.17. So certainly you see the, you know, the opposite trade of the USDX in there, or the dollar, US dollar, I should say, versus the euro. So, interesting day in the markets. Everything is pretty much, up. All the sector performances, the only one that was really down was utilities. But everything just turned around, like there is a breath of fresh air in the stock market. And, of course, the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, did open the door to possibly an interest rate increase as soon as June, which to me is in all news. I mean, it's something that's always, you know, we've talked about for how long now. The news signal, the markets went up when she added patient to her statements. Now she's removing patient, and the markets still go crazy. And she says, just because we remove the word patient from the statement doesn't mean we are going to be impatient. And, of course, she said that certainly
we're going to be non-patient. We're not patient. We're not impatient. We are non-patient.
We're no longer patient.
Uh-huh.
But so they're going to be – so. So they will tighten when they feel it is appropriate, and I don't think I ever heard someone use the word data as often as I heard her say it today.
I understand.
And it's all – everything's based on the data, and it's all based on one thing that I did notice.
It's not going to be her choice. It's not going to be their choice. This isn't – they're not conscious. So don't blame them if everything blows up in everybody's face. It's all controlled by the data.
Mm-hmm.
See? Untouched by human hands, data, that's all it's controlling here.
But what she did say that I found also listening to her statement was she talked a lot about inflation. And she said that she was reasonably confident that inflation is going to move back to its 2% objective over the medium term. So, you know, they know the dollar can't remain high. And she said that the reason the dollar has shown this strength over this period of time is because of the great economy. It's not the reason.
Bonk.
I know it. But so, you know, again, it shows they want inflation. They will do what they have to do to get inflation. And, you know, they don't like that high dollar. So
no, they can't. You know, again, I've argued that for a considerable period of time. That high dollar is contrary to the best interests of the economy. It, dollar deflation tends to precipitate or at least accompany economic depression. It's bad for debtors. The government is the biggest debtor in the world. They shouldn't want deflation. They should stop deflation. They should be terrified by deflation. And yet they've allowed apparent deflation on the U.S. dollar index for the past 8 months. They are finally coming to their senses, which is something I've been saying. They've got to do this unless they intend to collapse the economy. They've got to reinstall inflation. Unless, you know, they're up to something hard to understand. But
the way they usually raise inflation is by cutting the rates. I mean, they're already.
They can't cut the rates anymore.
Well, they can go negative. Everybody else is doing it. It's the new fad. They can go negative.
The rates only make sense if you're in a period of deflation. You know?
Sweden did it today. They lowered their rate by 0.15 percentage points from 0.25, and they're beginning to buy government bonds worth a 3.4 billion U.S. dollars because they need the uptick in inflation. So, I mean, everybody's going into, you know, negative rates and so forth, so maybe the U.S. will do it too.
It's hard to say. I can't imagine what it would do to the market.
The market would
crash. It would be so inconceivable. People would actually start paying attention. I don't think they dare do it because people say, what? They're going to stop watching Dancing with the Stars to find, what the heck are those people in Washington doing? Negative interest rates? Are they crazy?
No, I can't imagine it. But we live in interesting times, and we also have a great interesting guest. I believe Greg Hunter is on the line waiting for his introduction, and we do appreciate Greg Hunter of USAWatchdog.com joining us today. Good afternoon, Greg.
Hey, good to be here. I didn't want to cut you off. First of all, thanks for having me on your show. You guys are great. Second of all, just a couple of broad strokes. We're getting close. I don't want to say next week or next month, but we're getting close to the end of the pretend money games.
Mm-hmm.
The pretend that we have, I don't know, 3 months in a row that we have a growing economy. John Williams is out and said all the revisions are bad. Part of it's cold weather, part of it's not. And that we've had 3 consecutive months of retail sales falling, housing prices are stagnating, housing starts stagnating, the unemployment rate, the fantasy world of, we only have 5.5 or what, I mean, it's a stupid number. You know, if you did the unemployment rate the way it was done in 94 and earlier, as John Williams does for hedge funds and other people, he's at ShadowStats.com, we have a 23%+ underemployment rate. If you just look at U6, we have 11 or 12% unemployment rate. We don't, and the jobs that people are employed at are 29-hour jobs. You know, surprise, Obamacare, people are going to try to get around the system. But this is the problem with Janet Yellen. They want to have it both ways. I think I had a conversation with Catherine Austin Fitz, and we were betting on the dollar. I lost last year. He said dollar would go up. I thought it would be below 80. Never bet with Mike Tyson, right? Never get in the ring with Mike Tyson, Catherine Austin Fitz. And then we were talking on our latest interview in sometime in January. I said, I think corporate America is going to want to get this knocked down because, you know, they do a lot of business overseas, and they're going to knock this dollar down. What happened today? The dollar plunged, a pretty hefty plunge. I mean, a point in what, almost two points?
Very nearly 2 points. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very nearly 2 points. Gold went up, and I have this theory about, this is my own little Greg theory, about when the Fed chief talks, gold goes down. Oh, that was a bad day. Because gold didn't go down. Almost always, whether it was Bernanke
or
so many times that either Yellen or Bernanke or somebody, when they came out, gold went down. And I don't know, of course, market is rigged.
It usually goes down prior to their statements, and it did.
Well, and this is a problem because they want it both ways. You know, by the end of the year, they're going to raise it to 0.6%, they say. But there's two camps here. One says they have to raise rates. They have to raise rates, and to Alfred, to your point, they'll be behind the curve, which will usher in inflation. They'll look like they're trying to do something. They want it both ways. They want it both ways. And this is the problem with this cutting out. And Greg Mannarino, my buddy who at TradersChoice.net came on last week and called me up, and he just calls me and said, here's what I think. I don't even ask him. We just talk as friends. And I say, I'll quote you because I don't want to pass his thoughts off as mine. And he says, listen, this is going to be the key pivot, patience. Patient. You know how they say they're going to be patient with raising rates? He says, if they cut that term out, then they're in the we're going to have to raise rates mode. And sure enough, they did cut it out. And then they give this confusing statement on, we won't be like it was. Maybe by the end of the year, 0.6 of, percent to the Fed funds rate, the overnight key rate, banks loan each other money. But he nailed that. And, this week, everybody started with the patient. Well, what if they cut? This is the problem. The problem is that, we're coming to the end of the pretend, game, and we're going to all see the king buck naked.
The problem I have with this, if we're going to raise rates, the way I understand it, is something you're only likely to do in a period of inflation. And it certainly looks from the U.S. dollar index that we are in a period of deflation. That really adds to the burden on debtors when you're going to raise interest rates on top of deflation. They're going to be paying off their debts with more expensive dollars.
Well, some people think there'll be this rush into housing if they start raising rates a little, you know, a head fake, that people are rushing to housing, which is the dumbest thing in the world because, you know, really, if you are buying a house, you want rates to be 10%. And people look at me like, what? Yes, yes, because you don't buy an interest rate, you buy a property, you buy an asset. And, you know, as, you know, people live on this question, you know, what are the payments, man? When's the last time you saw, hey, buy this new Ford Fusion for $25,695 with our three? No. Buy this Ford Fusion for $199 down and $199 a month. What are the payments, man? And so, imagine what happened to housing. And I just say, let's say it's 3.5 or 3.6% for 30-year money, which is stupid. It's interest rate derivatives. It's crazy. We have tons of debt, and interest rates are going down. Nuttyville. And but just what would imagine if they just normalized to something normal? I don't mean skyrocketing 14% like it was in the late 70s and early 80s, or 21% or whatever it was. I mean, I'm talking 6.5 or 7%. And people, what? Well, that's what, you know, the price of everything is going to change, and it's going to get repriced. And, you know, Ben Bernanke said, a while ago that he didn't think that everything would normalize in his lifetime. Well, the market at some point is going to take over. At some point, because the Fed's not bigger than the market. They're being the market. They use all kinds of tactics like interest rate derivatives and exchange stabilization fund and phony accounting through FASB, you know, where mark-to-fantasy accounting. Well, I think this will be worth whatever in the year 2047. I'm going to hold it on my books as that. You know, I'm going to hold this house at $300,000 when we made the loan on my books, and it's only worth, $215,000. These guys are so leveraged that it doesn't take a big move, a few percent move for you to be wiped out. But there we are in an age where they change the law. If you are a systemically important financial institution, you can abandon generally accepted accounting principles. And they already have abandoned that for mark-to-market assets. They don't do that anymore. That's what the IRS does. So back to the interest rate thing. This is the bell ringing that the parties, you know, the gates are closing and the parties, you know, coming to an end. And at some point, what the Fed's trying to do is they're trying to say, well, I know we know, we know we printed a ton of money. We got $4.8 trillion or $5 trillion or whatever they claim to have, because you have to take their word for it. You can't audit them. They know, like you said, Alfred, they know inflation's coming. So they have to act like they know it's coming and do something, but they'll be behind the curve, just like the 70s. They were way behind the curve. But they're trying to get in front of the market here. They're trying to, prop things up. And deflation, just so you know, it isn't just about prices going down. It's about debt destruction. It's about bonds.
Oh, I understand.
Yes.
And therefore,
so,
we've
bankruptcy.
We've been told that our currency, dollars, debt is money. And we've been told that debt is an asset. And we're going to, bonds, we're going to find out neither is true. We're going to find out neither is true. I'm telling you, debt is not money, and debt is not an asset. Right. It's a liability.
Yeah, the whole thing is irrational. It's irrational to presume that debt is wealth. All right,
and
that's what the system is based on, and that is why we get, in my opinion, it is that fundamental lie that has put us in a position that's just untenable. There is no easy escape on this. We're at the rock, the hard place, and then there's the titanium on the other side. There's no way out of this that isn't going to be painful.
And the only
question is when. All right.
Well,
that's
the question.
When does
the
stuff hit the fan?
I'm thinking that we're seeing the beginnings of what it looks like with when, because if they felt confident enough to keep on, because they don't want the market to overtake them. They want to act like they're the market. They're not the market. And at some point, I mean, we're seeing this whole thing with Greece. I mean, it's so what did Nassim Taleb, you know, the guy that came up with the black swan, you know, theory, you know, the randomness of things, you know, blowing up, and you, nobody ever thinks, oh, things will never blow up, you know, or there's always white swans. You never see a black swan. Yes, you do, once in a while. And he said a very important thing that, you know, that complicated systems, derivatives that have grown from 700 trillion to, according to the bank, just official numbers, it's more than this, but to a quadrillion, 1,000 trillion, complicated systems are inherently fragile. And boy, our system is inherently fragile. Let's move over to
Greece. Talk more about that in a moment. We got a break for a couple of commercials. Greg, we will be right back on Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom and our guest Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Our guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Greg has some of the best interviews on the internet, all right? You visit his website, you can find, he talks to people who really have something to say. We were talking as we broke when the commercials, Greg was talking about how increasingly complex systems also become increasingly vulnerable. You want to expand on that, Greg?
Well, just look at Greece. I mean, in a normal time, if Greece defaulted and just told whoever their creditors were, listen, we're not paying, you know, like Argentina did, maybe a bank or two may go under, or somebody may get caught, or somebody may get clipped. But, you know, in normal times, if the regulators were regulated and saying, hey, listen, you can't have, but, you know, 10 to 1, you know, I mean, Basel lets you do, what, 30 to 1 or something like that. That, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal. But Greece, we have such an interconnected, complicated system. And Greece is, they're going to default.
Yeah, of course.
They're going to default. That is all there's to it. They're going to have to. They don't have, not because they want to, they don't have the money. They're not going to saddle up their people for generations. I mean, you know, they had the European Union members telling the Greek, you know, politicians, don't pay your workers for a month or two. I mean, that's cuckoo. And I had Nomi Prinz on it, and I had some problems with my site. So if you go to my site, you'll see a technical problem. We've had some server problems. I haven't been hacked. But Nomi Prinz said, listen, these were loan shark rates, and they doubled their debt. They got into trouble, and then they piled it on them. Here's some loans, more debt. They handle a debt problem with more debt because nobody wants to take a hit. Nobody wants to take a bank. Nobody wants to take a real haircut. Nobody wants to price things, and this is where the market's going to reprice things for what they're really worth. But that's just Greece, and what I'm going to have up later on this evening, I'm going to have Lawrence Kolikoff, supposed to be up, you know, today, Wednesday early in the morning, but I had my server problems. But he is saying in the interview that I have coming up that it's going to, at some point it's going to collapse. It's just a matter of when. He was in front of Congress in late February. Big yawn. Nobody covered it. And here he's talking about how, listen, told the senators in the Finance Committee. This is in late February of this, you know, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. He said, listen, yeah, we didn't accrue $5 trillion. Yes, in your phony accounting world, well, you don't count this, and you don't count this, and, you know, this is off book. And they said, you can't do that. I mean, unless you're intending not to give this out. He says, what our real deficit was, what we really went on the hook for, our deficit, what we spent, what we committed to, was $5 trillion in 1 year. 2014, $5 trillion.
Deeper in debt.
Billion,
we went $5 trillion deeper in debt.
$5 trillion more on the hook, and people like John Williams said this. I mean, in 2011, after John Williams did this, ChannelStats.com, that even USA Today did it once and said, ooh, it's really $5 trillion. John Williams is saying it's really more like $6 trillion. And so that's what he's been saying, $6 trillion. But listen, $5 trillion, $6 trillion, it ain't $500 billion, it ain't $1 trillion, it ain't $300 billion, it ain't $480 billion. I think that's what they said it was. It's $5 trillion. You cannot amass that is unsustainable to just the common person. That's 1,000 million. That's 5,000 million. And so,
well, 5,000 million. It just can't be paid. Anyone who looks at this can see that the debt can't be paid.
And they have no intention of paying it off, and that's what he is saying. And then he says that the government. And this is just, and listen, he is not, this is not a, this is just the what gap, not generally accepted accounting, but gap, the gap between here's your taxes and here's what you're telling people they're going to get, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, Obamacare, bank bailouts, the roads, the defense spending, blah, blah, blah. He says, you know, we're $210 trillion on the hook. $210 trillion. We do not intend to pay this back. We can't pay
this
back.
You know what that translates into on a per person, per capita basis in this country? That's like $750,000 per person for every man, woman, and child in the country. When you look at it from that perspective, all you got to do is look out the window and watch all the people come by who have $750,000 in assets, and there aren't going to be that many of them. And how, of those who have it, how many are willing to spend that money to support good old Uncle Sam? And there aren't going to be that many, which means the debt's not going to be paid. And what's the big problem with that? The problem is that for every dollar in debt, there is a correlative paper asset. What one man's debt is another man's asset. And when we wipe out the debt, and we have to because it can't be paid, we have to cancel the correlative paper assets.
The
stuff really hits the fan. All of a sudden, there's no paper assets to justify building another shopping center or a new road or lending money to buy a car or a new flat-screen TV. The paper assets disappear with the paper debt.
You know, I got a friend of mine who has a very unique, perspective. I've been watching him put, you know, tires and batteries and things on his cars, and I said, well, I thought your tires look pretty good. And he goes, yeah, you know what? They're, you know, 5, 6, 3 seconds. I'm getting them now. They're on sale. And I'm putting all new batteries. My batteries are 4 years old. I'm not going to wait for them to fail and then have to buy one for, you know, $1,000 or whatever it is and not be able to get one. I'm going to get all my stuff together.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, really, that's kind of a tangible asset play. You know, and I wonder, too, that, you know, Federal Reserve notes, dollars, 5s, 10s, 20s, I wonder if Sacagawea dollars, they are dollars, quarter dollars, half dollars. Mm-hmm. They're not Federal Reserve note quarter dollars, they're dollars. I wonder if having some change wouldn't help you out in terms of, you know, because that's minted by actually the Treasury. Now,
and it costs money to make
coins, but they're dollars.
It costs real money to make those pennies.
That's right.
I mean, they do cost. They cost something. They're not spinning them out of thin air, and they're going to be around here. Not necessarily pennies, but the nickels, dimes, quarters. We use them for vending machines. We still do.
Kalikoff, Lawrence Kalikoff, professor of economics, he also has out with a best-selling book. But he is. But he says that. Listen, I think they're going to get into trouble. I think they're gonna do what they always do, and they're gonna print money, and inflation's gonna take off, and interest rates are gonna go up. But the Fed's gonna be behind the interest rate curve, just like they were in the '70s. So you think about, oh, they're raising rates, gold's gonna crash. Nope, they're not gonna raise them enough. They need to Paul Volcker-ize to raise rates. I mean, oh, we're gonna have a, you know, remember when you, I don't know, when I was a kid, you know, you 10, 12, 13% interest rates at the peak of this, people thought, oh, they're gonna go much higher. You get locked up money for 10 years for 10%. 12%. Nobody wanted that money. They thought, oh, no, inflation. But Volcker, Paul Volcker, the former Federal Reserve chief from 79 to 87, he raised rates to the moon. That's why we had this big bond bull market at PIMCO's Bill Gross. You know, well, he's not Penny, now he's Janice. But PIMCO's Bill Gross took a big ride on is that they raised rates to 20-something percent, and they had nowhere to go but down, and buying a bond was locking in a higher rate every time you bought a bond. Well, that those days are over. Now the reverse is happening. Now we're at the bottom of the interest rate curve. Kalikoff thinks that Trey, you should listen to this interview. It's going to be up tonight. He thinks that Treasuries, and this is amazing for a mainline guy to say. He says, I think they're one of the riskiest securities in the world because rates are likely to go up. And I think the Fed's going to have to keep printing money, and Congress is going to pay our bills. They're not.
I think they're risky because they can't all be paid. That's the fundamental problem. The debt is too great to be paid, and not a little bit. In my guesstimate, I don't think they can pay more than 80% of the existing debt, and I don't think they can pay more than 20% of the existing debt, and probably not even 10%. They're going to write off 80-90%, maybe by means of inflation, hyperinflation, but it's going to disappear. And when it does, if you're sitting on one of those pieces of paper, you better hope it's soft and absorbent so you can get some use out of it, because it's not going to be worth much after this breaks down.
Federal Reserve notes, debt is not money, and debt is not an asset, and that's exactly what we're going to find out. People are going to find out debt is not an asset.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the whole Chinese are, and everybody in the world, I mean, this is a big rush around the world where even the president realized the noose is tightening around the dollar's neck, and that is that at the very least the renminbi is going to be, or yuan is going to be a competitor reserve currency. And they, you know, everybody is signing on to the Chinese Development Bank. I mean, they've been doing this for a while, opening up all these swap facilities, buying all this gold. I mean, the Chinese are not whistling Dixie here. I mean, this was not something when they say the Chinese buying, they're buying all the mine production. This is something that has been reported and verifiable. This is not a blip. This is not an internet rumor.
Did you see that photograph on Simon Black's newsletter? Sovereign man of the billboard in Bangkok.
Yes, I had somebody actually send me that.
Did you notice that the coin, the billboard is advertising that the renminbi is going to be at least an alternative world reserve currency, and they're advertising to the great unwashed, say, hey, we're going to give the dollar a run for its money. But what impressed me about that billboard is that the coin on the billboard. Yeah, the photo was indistinct. It wasn't precise enough where I could identify the coin, but the coin appears to be gold.
Just like Bitcoin, when they advertise that, it's golden coin, even though it's a digital.
Well, not just brass. It didn't look like brass. It looked like gold.
Yeah,
and the implication, at least, right or wrong, is they're thinking about backing their currency with gold.
A portion of it. I mean, there's going to be a portion.
Yeah,
hey, China's got their troubles, too. Don't everybody's like, oh, China doesn't have any trouble. Neither does Russia. Yeah, oh, yeah, they got finance. China has a huge real estate collapse on their horizon that's coming. Now, of course, they're hedging themselves with, you know, all this gold, and there's who knows how much they have. Do they have, you know, the 4,000 tons that they say, or that some people say, or do they have 10? Do they have 15? You know, do we really have our 8,000 tons of in change? Do we still have that? Is that, or did we sell all the gold that we were holding in foreign accounts in Europe to, you know, prolong the dollar's strength so we can have all these wars and spend all this money? And I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican. I'm just talking about the math of it. You know, what do we do? And then the answer is we don't know. And that is a bigger problem than knowing. And the reason why is because any kind of black swan, any kind of hiccup, any kind of, and Lawrence Kalikoff is talking about this too, that, you know, you have a bank go under and all of a sudden nobody knows about any transparency and everybody just says, I want my money out. Well, therein lies the problem.
That's true.
Is that, you know, they have these bank runs, and the little guy is going to stand at the window and get their $300 or $500 today or whatever. The big guys are going to do something else with their, but they're going to be electronically running on the banks. That's where the real bank runs will happen, and happen in short order, that they'll run them electronically and they'll have capital controls and all. That's coming. It is coming. I'm telling you, my prediction is Obama is going to come on the TV some Sunday night. And he's going to say, my fellow Americans, to something to the effect of, tomorrow we've had a cyber attack, or we've had we've been attacked, or we've had a breakdown, or we've had something, or, you know, our enemies are destroying our dollar, and the banks aren't going to open on Monday. But don't worry. Well, that's when you should worry. And that's when it's too late. And that is the thing about, because when this thing happens, I'm telling you, it's going to be, from all the people I talk to, and I talk to money managers and best-selling authors, and two things are constant. Two things are universal, whether you're in the inflation camp or the deflation camp, whatever. The two things that are universal is, A, we're going to have a crash. A big one, bigger than 2008, because the problem's bigger. We have $1,000 trillion in derivatives, and we had $700 trillion in 2008. And that's just using the official numbers. A lot of people say it's 2 quadrillion, 2.5 quadrillion. It's huge, but it's a big number. Clearly, it's worse than it was before, and we're headed for a crash. The other thing is that what we're doing is completely and totally unsustainable. So those are the two things are universal. Now, you know, when is this moment going to happen? Because when it happens, I think it's going to happen quickly. Nobody's going to walk out with a trumpet and you need to move over to your bank accounts and start moving all your stuff around and buy gold and silver and buy yourself some food and water and batteries and tires and get your house in order. And no, that ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen. What's going to happen is that they're going to have to do this to where they get the maximum benefit of the devaluation. And they can't have everybody running on the right side of the trade. They have to make gold look like it's a terrible asset to hold on to. They have to make silver look like it's a terrible asset to hold on to, even though they're as stores of value, even though you can't go to your grocery store and take a 10th ounce and say, I'll have to pay my groceries with this, which may come in the future. It's still a store of value. They have to absolutely screw over the most amount of people in the system for a devaluation of war. Queen Elizabeth did it. Queen Elizabeth did it. Sir Walter Raleigh was her boyfriend. They had this big expensive thing with the Spanish Armada. She spent a ton of money fending that off, the British won. And she was going to change the currency, and her boyfriend comes in, Mr. Walter Wallace, says, hey, I heard you're going to change the currency. You didn't tell me. Well, you know, in order, honey, I'm sorry. I mean, this is the exact words, but, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, everybody can't know in order for this to work. So he ended up finding out ahead of time. I'm sure he had got on the right side of the trade, quote unquote, because she devalued the coin of the realm. She devalued it. And anybody holding it, the dollars, that's the coin of the realm, is going to be absolutely screwed. We're going to have to default in some way, shape, or form. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be terrible. And people are just, they just don't realize how bad it's going to be. I mean, they, oh, I got a good job. You do today. So, I don't know. And people think, oh, I'll get all this stuff. People like Jim Sinclair say, don't go into debt because they're going to revalue that debt. And you may not be able to pay off the revalued debt.
The debt can't be paid. And they're going to have to repudiate the debt. The problem is you don't want to be, from my perspective, you don't want to be a creditor. If you're lending your coin to someone, your money, if you're lending your money, you're going to get hurt because the debt can't be repaid in full. They're going to be lucky to pay at 10-20%, in my opinion.
But see, that's what they did. The problem is astronomical, and it's in orders of magnitude. And this is why, and not a lot of people in the mainstream press, I mean, this is why Elizabeth Warren and Ted Cruz, can you believe that? You know, the arch right wing Ted Cruz and the arch left wing Elizabeth Warren are on the same page with, oh, John Boehner, you did what? You put in we're going to take care of all the derivatives and the banks get paid first and the savings accounts, they're unsecured creditors. And, oh, that happened in this budget bill that they put through. I think it's a big criminal act is what I think it is. But they changed the laws. They changed the laws for derivatives. They just piled all the derivatives on the country as if we could take it. And this is criminal. These banks should go under, not the U.S. should not go under, but that's what they've chosen.
But we'll watch and see. We're going to have to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom and Greg Hunter from USA Watchdog.com as our guest. We'll be back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Our guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Greg has some of the best interviews on the Internet.
He does.
I had one of his recent interviewees was Rob Kirby. And among other things, Mr. Kirby complained that the people are in charge of and maintaining the status quo of dishonest commerce in the world today. are globalists. They have contempt for humanity. They believe the population needs to be reduced from its current 7 billion to around 500 million people. And he goes on again. He talked about dishonesty, and he goes on. He says the gold standard, he advocates it because it is honest commerce. When you have honest commerce, people generally people are peaceful and get along with each other, and goes on. He says dishonest commerce is at the root of all the problems we are facing in the world. My question then, Greg, are we really facing a mathematical problem in our we see problems that involve our economy and the global economy. Are these problems mathematical? Somebody didn't tweak the interest rate exactly the way it should, or are they moral? Is the problem
that,
all right, go ahead if you care.
You know, even in the Bible, you have to have honest weights and measures. We don't have honest weights and measures in the financial world. We have derivatives. We have credit default swaps. We don't have any regulation for them. Brooks Lee Born at the Federal Trade Commission, at the CFTC, wanted to put derivatives on a public market where you had to post capital. AIG would have never happened. AIG, we want to insure these mortgage-backed securities. Oh, okay. Well, you need to post capital. It's like, State Farm. It's like State Farm coming to your state and saying, we want to insure, 400,000 houses, but we only want to put $2 in the kitty to cover that. The insurance commissioner would say, no. You need to post, you need to post enough money in that fund that you can reasonably rebuild 1,000 houses a year. Or something. Well, that's not what they did with AIG. They exempted them from any kind of regulation at all. So what did AIG do? AIG said, we'll insure everything. Nothing's ever gone. What could go wrong? Nothing's ever collapsed. These are mortgage-backed securities. They're backed by houses. They're backed by houses with no equity in them. That's what they were backed by. And what happened? Boom. We had a $180 billion, a debacle with the AIG that had to be bailed out to save all these banks from cascading into, bankruptcy, which is what they should have done. They should have done that.
When we talk about this,
but it's 10 times worse now. It's worse. Now we can't have just one Lehman or one AIG. We might have 20 Lehmans. I mean, this Greek exit, this is going to start a daisy chain of default that will happen anyway. We don't know. We have no idea where the next black swan, will happen. I mean, could they ring fence, Greeks leaving the euro? Sure, they know about it ahead of time. They might be able to print enough phony money to cover all the, the bond obligations they're going to say, go take a hike on. It's $350 billion or something. And I think the Greeks are just playing for time, and they're going to come up with a drachma, and they're getting their printing presses ready. They're going to have huge inflation. It's going to be tough, but they're not going to pay these debt payments, which go right out of the country into somebody's pocket. Iceland did this. They had a rough time, but they got rid of the bankers. This is
a year and a half, 2 years.
I mean, this is evil. This is evil, and we don't know how bad it will get, but it is bad. John Boehner would have not put in this bill that the derivatives are going to be covered at the FDIC level, and I'm telling you, they wouldn't have done it. If he didn't think that they were going to need it, and they were panicked, Citigroup and J.P. Morgan were panicked getting these guys to put this in, which is not for these guys should be taken. We should have taken these guys to receivership in 2008 and said, we're going to cover the depositors. What cost us about $6 trillion? How much are we up to? According to Catherine Austin Fitz, we're up to $40-something trillion is what we've spent so far. What do we have? We have a broken system. We have the oligarchs that bought land and houses and gold and cases of silver and whatever. But what do we don't have? We still have the problem. We're still insolvent.
I think the problem when we talk about the dishonesty, for me, the big problem goes to the concept of risk. And most of these major financial institutions are working day and night to minimize risk. They go into hedging strategies. They go into derivative strategies. The idea is to protect the money they've invested with some sort of hedging operation. And the problem with all of this, the escape from risk, is the escape from personal responsibility. These people, major financial institutions, say, we need to get rid of the risk of derivatives, so what will we do? We'll dump the risk, the responsibility. If the derivatives go south, we'll dump it on the dummies out there in TV land. They'll pay for it, and we won't have to. This separation of risk from profit is the fundamental dishonesty. If you're going to make an investment, invest the money, and if it profits, you get to keep the profit. But if you make the investment and it goes south, you suffer the loss. And the system is constantly looking for ways to find people who don't get a taste of the profits, but they're the ones that have to suffer the loss. And for me, that's the fundamental dishonesty that animates the system. Does that sound plausible to you, or...
Yes, but it'll never happen because the people in control won't. This is why we have this problem. This is why it never got better, because they won't take a hit. They won't write these assets off. You know, I mean, General Electric should have been $1 a share. David Stockman said this, former White House budget director. And everybody just went, what? Yes, they should have been $1 a share. Jeffrey Immelt should have been fired. He should have been fired. Jamie Dimon should have been fired. I mean, he had his Lundin Whale trade, and he sat up in front of Congress, and he's in his, and he's told Congress, well, it's only $2 billion. And then we find out, lo and behold, it was $6.2 billion. Oh, he only missed by $4,000 million. Only missed by $4,200 million. And he banged himself a nice big fat raise, and he was off, and he was intimately involved, and I watched the live congressional testimony of his people on the who were in London, who said, yeah, well, Jamie Dimon knew all, he was interceding with regulators, and he knew all about it. It wasn't like he found it, Shazam, he found out about it. No, he was involved. And yet he kept his job, and nothing happened. And the reason why nothing happened, why the heck can launder money for Iran, which I don't, I'm not sure they're still on the list of state-sponsored terrorists, because they had a, you know, a guffaw with the printing of the latest terror report, the 2015 report, and said, oh, we had some kind of a format issue. Really? And that just left, and you were just going to leave it like that? And they're, you know, Hezbollah and Iran are no longer on the list of state-sponsored terrorists, because it's hard to cut a deal with people that are considered terrorists, and that's Iran. And so, you know, they're going to cut this deal, and it's not going to go well. And that's the other thing that, if we have time to talk, just really quick, I mean, you know, anyway, the long and short of it, to answer your first question, that's why we have what we have, because we don't, nobody went under. Nobody took a hit. Nobody went under, nobody took a hit.
Yeah, that's the problem, because if you're
up to the trough and took on all this money, which we created a ton of money, even people like Lawrence Kotlikoff, mainline, well, we created a tremendous amount of money already. I mean, we, yes, and we're, what's going to happen to that? People, it's like you said, they're going to want to take that paper, and they're going to want to make a claim on a real asset. And the problem is, we've got a stack of paper that was up to your belly button and a stack of assets that was up to your heel, and then we made that stack of paper assets claims, you know, up to the ceiling of your house, and you know that stack of physical assets that you could claim is still up to your heel. Are you
with
me?
And there's a problem. Yeah.
And that's a problem. And everybody's going to want to make a claim on that paper to something real. That's why, you know, in Zero Hedge they said, buy this, buy that, buy everything you can. If you see something, buy it. And so that's what they're, that's what's coming. And, but Israel, I want to talk about Israel just for a minute. And, listen, I'm not a policy guy, and I don't know what the answer is to peace in the Middle East. I don't. I'm going to tell you what I think's coming. I'm going to give you a reporter's look at what's coming. Netanyahu, I said that Obama was meddling with, you know, sending his number two campaign guy over there, and then what, $350,000 they sent to some, you know, couple of groups that were totally anti-Netanyahu. And Obama was meddling in this, and the Israelis are a very educated group of people. And I said, this is going to backfire. People are going to look at this and go, what? He's not for us. He won't even talk to our prime minister when he's in town talking to Congress over some, you know, he talks to the other guy, Herzog, in Europe, you know, Kerry, and they meet with him over in Europe. But they don't even talk to Netanyahu. This is going to backfire. Boom, backfired. Netanyahu won and won big. Got a quarter of the seats, 25 people running, you know, you know, in this election, 25 different groups. Different people trying seeking power. He got 30 out of 120 seats. That's a pretty big win. And he ran on the platform of no two-state solution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He ain't going to form a new government and say, just kidding. This is going to kick off some real violence. And I don't care if you're for the Israelis or for the Palestinians. I'm saying this is going to kick off. And they probably figure, hey, listen, it's coming anyway. I mean, the Iranians are on their border. near Golan. They killed an Iranian general there a few weeks ago, and Iran said they were going to directly attack Israel. That's a new wrinkle. And, you know, when you kill a general, I mean, you don't just send a general, right? I mean, isn't a general supposed to, you know, command
He's
people?
He's not there on a scouting mission, per
That's
se.
Right. He's not there by
right.
himself. They could send a corporal.
Yeah.
They could send a sergeant.
There was an article.
And so this is going to be big. That is a huge black swan. And
that's a huge black swan. And here's another side on that that was conservativebite.com reports this. They say on CNN this morning, White House aide David Simas avoided congratulating Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the Israeli elections. Instead, he would only congratulate the Israeli people on having an election. What this illustrates, or at least is how much antagonism is really there between Netanyahu and Obama at this point in time, and what does this...
It's not a made-up myth, internet myth. It is huge. It is big. I mean, it's pretty well, I mean, they'll deny this, say, oh, well, no, you know, we hire out people all the time. People hire themselves out all the time to, you know, be campaign, managers in other countries. And, you know, I mean, what's his name? Carville did it against Karzai in Afghanistan and, you know, whatever. But, you know, we do this all the time. But you don't give money through the State Department to groups that are campaigning their goal, their stated goal ahead of time, not just that they were going to run against, do something unprecedented and run against Netanyahu. A couple of different groups that this money, you know, supposedly went to. We didn't spend for that. Well, come on. I mean, you know, if you can spend it to have all the other things you're doing, then divert all your other money to the. It's clear that he was, that they definitely wanted the election to go a certain way and against Netanyahu. And the Israeli people knew it, and they thought, wow, this is dangerous. But, you know, candidates, just so you know, are on page with the Iran thing. Both Herzog and Netanyahu are on the same page about this nuclear deal. It's a bad deal. Both of them are on the same page.
Well, we're going to have to assume that Israel is going to become more independent. Right now, they have to think in their own minds they can't rely on Obama. That means, to me, they're going to have to be a couple more notches more ready to go nuclear if they have to.
He already said that, though. He says, we don't need anybody.
Yeah.
He's already
said that.
That's
the point.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Greg.
I cut you off. Go ahead. He already said that.
That's my job to cut melody off.
He already said that.
Now you're interfering with my job, Greg. I'm the one responsible for cutting melody off. So the point we're getting to is that the world is extraordinarily unstable. It's in a dangerous, precarious position right now, and it only makes sense to get ready. You talk about a guy who's buying tires and batteries for his car. It's evidence of someone who's preparing. Go ahead, Greg. We've got, 45 seconds thereabouts?
Well, and here's – I just want to make sure that people understand this. We're not preparing for some war like we did with the Korean War or the Vietnam War. We were incredibly strong. The economy was incredibly good. We printed tons of money, and then we got this big inflation to the 70s. But we were doing great. We were really good. I mean, America was the Mac. I mean, this is not the case today. We're incredibly weak. The system is incredibly heavily laden with debt. There is all kinds of, if war breaks out, I think you'd be, I don't know which will happen first, but it'll happen sequentially. Either we get war and the system collapses, or the system collapses and we get war, but it'll be close together. Those two things will be close together. That's my prediction. They'll be close together. And I'm telling you, I predicted that this would backfire with Netanyahu and he'd be the PM. They wouldn't knock him out of the box, and they didn't. And I'm telling you that the other thing is that you're going to see Democrats, if he takes this deal to the UN, Democrats, particularly in the Senate, are going to say, whoa, this is a treaty. This is a treaty. It looks like a treaty. It walks like a treaty. It quacks like a treaty. It's a treaty. You can't bypass us.
But Obama thinks he can bypass everyone, and we can bypass everyone except the guy who's running the program, and we've run out of time. Greg, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you,
Greg. We always enjoy talking to you. You had a lot of interesting comments, a lot of excitement. Glad to be having you on the program. Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. I'm Alfred Addis, Melody Cedarstrom.
No problem.
Be back manana. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer, and Greg Hunter. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a well-being